Kenta Koga.
Where are you, Kenta Koga? Kenta Koga.
Welcome to the podcast. I am photographer Sid Caesar.
And I am designer Dave Say.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. What day is it?
It is Monday, February 10th, 2014.
And what's it like outside?
Snowed a little last night, so there's a dusting all over the ground.
That's right. I moved my car before 9.
We're supposed to get more snow on Thursday.
What?
It's going to be another snowmageddon. In a world where it's covered with snow.
Oh, did you hear that? I had posted this link on Facebook about... nonfiction books as over-the-top movie trailers?
Yes.
Yeah.
I heard that while I was playing over the weekend.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I play NPR when I'm in the shower. Too much information. But and that was on while I was showering.
Yeah. So you lather up to Terry Gross?
Sometimes. Usually Car Talk's on when I'm lathering up.
Oh, okay.
So I get to listen to Click and Clack.
Yeah.
I'd much rather be able to listen to Faith Saley when I'm...
Who's Faith Saley?
Oh, you don't know Faith Saley?
No.
Oh, she's good.
What's she on?
She used to have her own show, and I can't remember the name of it, but she just has this incredible voice. And you just know, like, just from listening to it, you just know she's very sexy.
She has a sexy voice.
A sexy voice. Yeah. And she's funny, too, which is even more sexy.
Okay.
All right.
Let's
redirect this.
This is getting into dangerous territory.
Exactly.
So, what's going on, man?
Last did we do the video last week? Last week, so months ago.
Yeah.
My buddy Ian Ethan, crazy double neck guitar maniac. Mm-hmm. We had done a video for him last summer. It was in color, and it was this looping piece. And he had made a new composition that was just the double neck guitar, and he wanted to make a video for it. So we got together four and a half months ago, or something like that. And we literally spent all day. Like, he was here at, I think, like 9:30. And he wanted to get footage coverage for two songs. And I think we left the studio at like 11 o'clock at night. Like, the one song that we've done this new video for, it's like 9 minutes long. And I think we did like 11 takes or something like that. Like, it took all day for two songs. Wow. So we got a bunch of raw footage together. And then what he wanted to do was he sort of went through, he recorded all the audio from those takes that we did. And then he edited that, all those takes together to make one master take. So he took like bits and pieces from this one and added it to this one, and all the good parts from this one. So he made this master take. And then once the master take was done, then he was ready to get together and start actually editing a video for that. And so we did that the last two Tuesdays, all day, both days. And we finally got a new video that he can use online, and he can use it to sort of send to places to help book him and stuff like that.
Hmm.
And it was good. We unveiled it last Wednesday, which was everybody was at home because there was snow all over the place, and we were getting another snowmageddon. And so it finally went live, and I was very happy with it. And he was he's just like over the moon with it. He's so happy with it. And it was kind of interesting because we had shot the first video with him in color, and he was seeing the next video in color. But as soon as I heard this song, it was a very tender song. I was just like, I can't shoot this in color. It just doesn't work. Like, it's just, color would be too busy for the melodies and stuff and the harmonies in this song. And so he was a tough sell at first. He was like, well, and I was just like, let's just do black and white. Like, we'll slightly overexpose it so it's nice and airy, and it'll be all black and white, and that way nothing is standing out. We shot it here at the studio, and he was kind of, well, I don't know. And then I gave him all the raw footage, and he took it home. And like, I got an email a couple of days later from him, and he had watched over all the black and white stuff. And he was just like, oh, my God. He's like, it looks so nice. So that was kind of nice. And I got a little pushy even during when we were recording. And I was just like, no, trust me. Black and white, black and white, black and white.
You were directing.
I went totally.
Excellent.
So it was good. So we got together for 2 days at Studio 101A in Amherst, our buddy Tom. And we got it edited together, and we co-edited it, so like, we were both sort of bouncing ideas off of each other.
Well, that must have been fun.
And it was kind of nice, and it was nice because I heard things in his perspective, and he's coming from a music ear,
yeah,
and then I'm coming from a visual standpoint. So it's, how can we make these two work? And a lot of it was sort of about cuts and you know, like, you can't edit too fast because the song is so slow that you don't want to visually interrupt what you're trying to listen to and stuff like that. And there's a couple of spots where the editing gets a little fast, but I think it works because it's part of a song, you know, it's part of the song, yeah. And it's a little faster than normal.
Yeah.
So it was good. And it's funny because we were sitting there and he's listening to it and all he can see is every once in a while when like a piece of the cut doesn't match with the actual music, like you can see it sort of start to trail off.
Yep.
Like he was trying to edit that. And from a visual standpoint, like it's been interesting getting all these sort of little learning things. Like, there's one piece of sensor dust on one of the takes, and it was like one of the good takes, and he didn't even notice it. Like he was watching it over and over again, and I'm like, yep. Like grabbing the table, and he's like, "What's your problem?" And I'm like, "There's this big piece of dust," and he's like, "I didn't even see that. I'm too busy looking at like the fingers and everything."
Yeah.
So that was a good learning experience. Like, so it's like it's in there, and I know it's in there, but
yeah,
maybe people won't notice it too much.
Yeah, they probably won't. It's great to work with other people whose, you know, eye you trust, you know, who is the idea of like what the creative thing is going. That's yes. That's one thing I miss about working with other people when I'm, you know, in my hermit mode.
Right.
But yeah.
So it was good. So it went live. It's on my YouTube. It's on Ian's YouTube. So we'll put a link for that.
Excellent.
It looks really nice in like 1080 HD. Like it's very pretty. It's very crisp and sharp and. So that was exciting. And then everything has backstory. So then back in July of last summer, Petapixel, which is an online news, photo news aggregate site, they had asked me to post a little thing about the wedding tintypes that we had done a few years ago.
Yeah.
And so they turned it into this big article. And as a result of that article being published, I got contacted by this business, Lomography, which has become really popular lately, sort of in the quote-unquote hipster photo scene. It's a website that sells primarily film-based cameras, like Diana cameras, like older plasticky plastic kind
stuff,
of.
Yeah.
So they had started a Kickstarter project where they wanted to create a Petzval lens, which is a brass lens that when we had our wedding photographs done, this was the type of lens that they used. It was something they used in the 1800s for wet plate processes. And Lomography wanted to sort of figure out a way to create a lens like that to fit on digital SLR cameras. So they started a Kickstarter, and like the Kickstarter went crazy. Like they were only trying to get, I think, $100,000. And by the end of the Kickstarter, they had over $1 million, it's like $1.3 million. Like nuts. It went absolutely nuts. And I was like so on the fence about getting one of these because I was just like, it would be really nice to be able to try to shoot like I was shooting wet plates, but I don't have the ability to shoot wet plates here at the studio. And then I got this email, and the Lomography people had read the Petapixel thing, and they were like, "We're trying to do this Kickstarter." And I'm like, "Yes, you are." And they were like, "We were wondering if you would be interested if we sent you a lens that you could test out and then let us know what you think." And I was like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa." So we had a lot of back and forth emails, and last week a lens finally came. So I've got a couple of ideas I'm trying to line up so that I can give this a really rigorous test.
Oh, yeah.
So I can make a nice big thing about it and share it with them, and they can share it with people if they want and everything. And I'm going to try to make it a no holds barred, like they're not buying me off or anything like that, which is nice. So it's just tell us exactly what you think.
Yeah.
So it's nice. It's beautiful. It's this beautiful big piece of brass. But it's very demanding. It's not something that I think a lot of casual shooters are going to be patient with because there's a lot of, you need to put a lot of time and finesse into sort of massaging it to get it to work, and it seems very, very specific. It seems it's very for a very specific portrait look, but I think when you do get it, like when you do sort of everything comes together, I think they're going to look really, really nice.
It that kind of goes along with Lomography's overall product line, the niche audience that they have. I remember looking at that site like years ago. My sister's actually into this plastic camera stuff too, it turns out. And so it's all like, you know, blurry plastic lens and and it's all kind of dreamy looking.
One of the original Diana cameras. In fact, that was when I first opened the studio up. I was calling it Plastic Camera Studio because I used to use the, and it does. It's this medium format and the big square negative, but it's all because it's a plastic lens. So everything is like soft and airy and dreamy it's pretty awesome. So that was kind of cool. So I've got it, and I played with it a little bit yesterday. I took Sarah outside in the cold and took a couple of quick shots of her. But I got a couple of extensive reviews, like things I want to line up so that I can really put it through its paces.
Yeah, that's great.
Test the shit out of it. Pardon my French. So that was cool. And then what else did I get? And then I ordered this thing called a sensor gel stick, and it's to clean the sensors on your digital SLRs. And I've been doing, up until now, I've been doing a wet method, which is you have this little chemical, liquid chemical, and you put it on this little, like, tissue, and then you fold the tissue and you put it on this thing that looks like a little spatula.
Yeah.
And you put it in there and you actually swab the sensor, which makes a lot of people nervous because you're dealing with chemicals and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But I learned how to do it, and I got over that, the being scared of doing it. And then this thing just came out recently, and I was very curious about it. And supposedly it's the actual thing. Like, when you... If you send your camera into Canon, or if you send it into Nikon, or places like that to have it professionally cleaned, supposedly this is what they use. And I've seen videos on YouTube of, like, the Leica factories where they're using this exact thing to clean all the dust off when people send them in, or when they're getting to roll out the new cameras, you know, to sell them to stores. This is the last thing they do. They go in and it's a stick. It's like this little plastic stick, and it has this square sticky gel thing on it. And what you do is you just tap the sensor, and it picks up all the dirt off the sensor with the sticky gel, and then it just comes with this paper, like stickers. You just peel it, and the sticky paper is more stickier than the gel.
Mm-hmm.
So you just tap the gel on the sticker, and then the sticker picks up all the dirt.
That's great.
And it's awesome. So I did it on my Mark II, and I did three passes just to make sure. Yeah. And it's like, it's gone, all the dust gone.
Wow.
So I have a bunch of other cameras to clean. And it's a little expensive. It's $40. Supposedly, there's already a knockoff on Amazon for like $12 or something like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy that.
No. And it comes with a bunch of paper, and it comes in a nice little metal case.
Very cool.
But it's awesome. And it's like, there's no reason to be scared now of cleaning your own camera. And this is the same thing. Like, you know, some places charge $100 for this, and you leave the camera with them.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, you know, Canon Professional Services, you have to mail the camera to them, and then they clean it, and they mail it back.
Uh-huh.
And it's supposedly it's exactly what they use. And it's actually a product from Germany. So somebody's importing these and then selling them. So I think they're probably just buying them right from the source or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. So I'll put a link up for that. I'm trying not to sound too much like a shill on some of these things, but they're just really cool products.
You're enthusiastic about products.
They are. It's exciting.
I've got a list here, too. So, like, just go to town.
Yes. So that was exciting. What else? A long time ago, we had done a thing with Teresa, and she had made fun of me because at one point I said I couldn't do something with her because I was at my parents' invoicing my comic books.
Oh, that's right.
And that got some mileage. But actually, they're halfway done. I spent Saturday. Sarah came over and did some data entry with me.
Uh-huh. This past Saturday?
Yes, and I got half of the boxes of everything is invoiced, and we used a Google spreadsheet, so it's accessible anywhere.
Great.
So that's awesome. So next Saturday, we're going to go and try to get the last half of it done.
Oh.
So many comic books. nice. So that was good. And then, business-wise, just a while ago, I sort of finally admitted that I couldn't do everything by myself. And finally sort of asked Sarah for help, and that she kind of became my part-time business manager, and she was reaching out, being the first point of contact for businesses. We were initially contacting like recording studios and music companies and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
We're still doing that, but she's just recently sort of, we're taking a break from that, and she started contacting local advertising firms, and we're starting to get responses for that. So I have a meeting actually this afternoon with one, and then an advertising company in Portsmouth wants to meet with me next week.
Cool.
So that's kind of exciting. I don't know, you know, what this sort of stuff is like. I've never sort of had those types of meetings before.
Yeah. So you'll go in, you'll smile. I think I said this earlier. You'll get the smell of Sid all over the place. And they'll go like, I like this smell. It smells like possibilities and profit and creativity.
Fun and creativity. And
yeah. And, you know, when it comes down to the billing stuff, you know, you pick a rate, start with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
A lot of people will get kind of bent out of shape, like, oh, how much should I charge, or, you know, whatever. The first few ones, you're learning. You know,
right,
just like that, and the next one you'll change things as they
so. How would you approach that? Because I always use, you see it from a project standpoint. It's like, well, it depends on the project and the scope of the project and the availability of finances that project has, right, or whatever. Or do I just go in and say, you know, like, I start at $1,200 a day?
If it was me going in. And I was starting. Let's say, like, I'm one of those guys that just has a digital camera. It's like coming in. I've got a little portfolio.
Yeah.
And I would probably price it Well, for me, I already have another line of business. I know what they charge for that.
Right. So it's let's try this. Let's say, so you've seen the amount of work that I've done, you know, my body of work. Going as just as an expectation, like what would you think sort of my...
Well, there's two prices you think of. One is the price that you think the market is asking for, and you might shoot you for being somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
And then the other one is based on how much you value your time.
Yep.
And how available you are. And that's the adjustment I would make. There's a third price that you think of, like, well, how much do I really need to make this work as a living?
Right.
Assuming a particular volume of work. Let's say you're booking like three projects a week or something like that.
Right.
And then you figure out, well, can I make a living off of this? Or am I thinking about this as a supplementary income?
Yep.
When you're just starting with this stuff, it's probably going to be supplementary. You can't like charge your entire cost of living on the first project.
Oh, no.
And you also want to establish long-term relationships.
Right.
So, you know, starting with the market rate, whatever that is, and you're saying like I'm flexible with budget at times if you tell me in advance. You don't want to throw up too many like what-if roadblocks because you know, the advertising agencies, they want someone who's reliable, and they don't know if you're reliable yet. They want someone who's going to be affordable and profitable for this project. You might say, this is my general rate, and you quote a market rate.
Yep.
And then you say, actually, at that point, you don't know. So, like, you know, when you get in contact with me when you have projects.
Is it safe to ask them how they usually do things?
Yeah, ask them what the process is.
Yeah.
And so what can I expect?
What have they, you know, like what, how do they deal with other clients in the past or?
I guess you could feel that out. Yeah. I wouldn't ask that. I do it based on a project basis when people ask me stuff. Okay. What I do is I say this, my rate is $85 an hour for doing this kind of stuff. It's based on my availability. It's also based on the kind of project, whether it fits me or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if it does fit me, then I tell them when I think I can do it. That's but I'm doing code type stuff.
Right.
And so what I try to establish is like I cost about this much in the range. And they go, okay, that's more expensive than this or less expensive than this. Okay. And then I also give them an idea. Like it takes me typically about 2 to 4 hours to do some preliminary design work. But the actual production rate, you know, might be longer based on the product is. And so when we get to that point, I can give you an estimate for that.
Okay.
So, you know, generally, I'm saying, like, what you want to convey in the first meeting, at least what I want to convey in the first meeting, is I'm excited to work with you. I have my stuff. I'm organized enough that I can keep a schedule and a calendar date. Give me a call when you have something for me. Here's something to remember me by, you know. And, you know, and you're also figuring out if you want to work with these people.
Right.
Like, for me, I'm really picky about who I work with.
Right.
I don't work with anyone who I suspect is using me as some sort of check mark on a to-do list, and they don't really care about what it is that they're making. They just need someone to take responsibility for this so they don't have to. I want to work one-on-one with people in a creative capacity. I'm not sure what it's like with the photography. Maybe you're more independent there. But just think of it as an initial contact.
Yeah.
Be available. Be friendly. And when it gets time to brass tacks, he said, like, well, let me know what you need.
Yep.
And then you can work on the list of the questions that you might ask for that.
Okay.
And so, you'll figure it out.
Good.
It's good. It's one step at a time. It's the first step into a greater adventure. And sometimes they don't work. Sometimes they do.
Right. That's got to remember that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I've learned a lot from what projects worked for me, which ones didn't. I know some of my hang-ups are I want to do things right all the time.
Yep.
And sometimes clients will want things just done quickly and good enough. So I had to remember that sometimes.
Okay.
But those generally aren't the clients I want to work with because I'm working in more – I have more of an artistic heart, I guess, about the stuff that I do. And it gets in the way of doing, like, you know, lots of business. But, you know, that's just the way I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
So
what have you been up to? I'm trying to do some show notes here.
Yeah, I'm doing the programming. I have this programming project I think I mentioned last time, doing a sort of a JavaScript-based virtual environment teaching system, I guess you could call it. It's for a National Science Foundation grant. done by some researchers at UCLA. And I'm working with my cousin's company, Inquirium, which does learning sciences consulting. And so that's coming up on, I think, the 18th, like less than 10 days from now.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's like a week from now. They'll be flying out.
Nice.
And meeting the UCLA team for the first time, both my cousin and I. So there's like a lot of, we have some preliminary code. I need to clean that stuff up, or I want to. So I've been like learning a lot about JavaScript best practices. And
yeah.
You know, JavaScript is a computer language I don't particularly like because I didn't understand its nature. And on the surface, it looks like another language that I'm more familiar with.
Okay.
But underneath of it, it's actually it has a completely different approach if you're going to use it well. And I just figured out what that was. And so I guess I'm a little bit more open to it.
Huh.
So that's the main. That's my main task.
Yeah.
I've been on a couple podcasts. I had just finished up a podcast with Brett Terpstra, who has a podcast on the 5x5 network called Systematic.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was good. It was another mysterious person from Minnesota. Like, Minnesota is one of those states that keep popping up in my life. Like, every time I come across someone who's doing something that I find interesting and attracts my attention, like there's a certain vibe to certain people. Invariably, it's like 50% of the time they're from Minnesota. Nowhere else. They're never from San Francisco. They're never from New York City. They're from Minnesota.
Why do you think?
It might be, well, someone described it to me once as, when I asked, like, why Minnesota? And they looked at me and said, you would like Minnesota. And so they're friendly, but they keep their distance.
Huh.
And I was going, that does sound like me. I like people, but I don't like them, like, in my face all the time. And there's that kind of, I guess, a respectful distance that people keep from each other. So I'm going to have to go down there and see what they're putting in the water or what's going on. Or maybe it's just... I think Minnesota was founded by a lot of Scandinavians, or am I thinking of Wisconsin?
Huh.
I think that I keep thinking there's a lot of sausage there.
Sausage. Anyway. Minnesota sausage? Does it make sense?
I don't know. It doesn't. What do you think of when you think of Minnesota?
Biggest ball of twine? I don't
know. Oh, yeah. It has one of those kind of roadside traction. You're like in Sam and Max, that video game.
Yes.
Yeah. And I have an upcoming
Mall of
to
America
be...
is in Minnesota.
Oh, is it?
Okay. Yes. We've been to Minnesota. I've been to Minnesota. Sarah and I have.
And? What did you eat there?
It was really cold. It was nothing. We went to the Mall of America.
Oh, that's where that is?
Huh. Yeah. That yeah, we stopped like to my buddy John, the guy that used to work for EA and the one we went to PAX with. He lived in Minnesota for a while. When we drove cross country, we stopped and saw him.
Yeah, okay.
He took us to the Mall of America and we went to the San Rio store.
Mm.
At the end.
Yeah. Is it the world's biggest San Rio store?
It must have been. I think it was pretty big. I mean, the mall is like, there's a roller coaster in the mall. It's
what?
Like, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Huh.
It is. It's like the largest mall in the universe.
Yeah. So I'm also going to be on Rob and Jersey's Lean Into Art podcast. We're recording this Thursday, I think.
Uh-huh.
And so the topic for that will be making heartfelt goals.
Oh.
So, these guys are awesome because Rob is a programmer. He does I think web development or like for a major retailer.
Okay.
And Jersey, he makes comic books and he teaches comic books. And together they're kind of artist entrepreneurs.
Yep.
And they're creating and they're helping other people create. So it's like it's pretty cool. And I'm kind of excited about this topic because I've been in my Groundhog Day resolutions making period. Like on February 2nd, that's when I do them. And this year's resolutions are, one, make more starts and not plan so much that I don't want to do them anymore.
Yep.
But just go and move on it and just see what happens. I'm trying that for at least for a month. And then the other one is just to deprogram some of the negative thinking that I have about everything. Everything.
Everything.
Yeah, I didn't get the information. Yeah, so that's coming up. So it's been a big podcast week, I guess. We're doing this one. I was on that one yesterday,
yep.
And like this one coming up. And I don't really have time for all of it, but it's necessary.
Is it going to be another video podcast? Like, are we going to watch everybody?
They record in Google Hangout, so
yep.
I don't remember if it's
because there was one I saw that you guys had done. It was all video.
Yeah, how did it come out?
It was good.
It was good.
Yeah.
Oh, I always worry that they just like end up rambling on so long. Yeah, speaking of rambling, how much time do we have left? We have 5 minutes left.
Nice.
What else is going on? Programming pants. I've been looking for programming pants. Because I've been programming at home more often. And I find regular pants confining when you're programming at home. You're trying to be comfortable. You're wearing your slippers.
Yep.
Yeah. So no one makes programming pants for working at home.
They're pajamas, right?
Well, you want something that's presentable also when you're doing the video conferencing.
Okay.
So it needs to look good enough on video conference. It's like a prop. It doesn't have to be a real house. It needs to be the facade of a pair of pants.
Why, if you're video conferencing, why are people looking at your pants? Why
you might stand up and you would reveal something.
Wait, you're supposed to wear pants when you're on video podcasts?
You're supposed to if you're going to stand up.
Totally doing it wrong.
So, but they could be comfortable if they read as real pants on video resolutions. That's good enough. And you also want them good enough so when you're sitting on the couch, you feel comfortable and maybe take a nap as you think about things. So I went to the mall to.
This is Dave's way of saying very gently that he's going to be wearing jeggings from now on.
What are jeggings?
They're pant leggings. They're leggings where they look like pants.
No, nothing clingy. Yeah. You know, so like I'm ruling out yoga pants.
Yes, Dave.
Do you even make yoga pants for men?
I don't know. I don't want to know. I hope not.
I don't want to know. God. And, you know, but there are some. They do make a pair of jeans. Someone makes a pair of jeans that is made out of sweat. Shirt material, that soft cloth, what's it called?
Terry cloth
or something like that. It's really soft.
It could be like James Bond in the that movie in the 60s where he's wearing that one piece terry cloth jumper, sky blue, baby blue.
So they actually use a jean pattern on this material, so it looks from a distance it looks like it's like a pair of pants.
Okay.
But you know, it's actually sweatpants. Wow, they're already coming in on
jeez
the, so, there's some upcoming events we should talk about. Hippo, best of 2014, voting has started.
There'll be a link. It's at surveymonkey.com/s/hippo best of 2014. We'll put a link, though.
Yeah, put a link in.
That's for all local people. Vote for all your local businesses and personalities, yep. And help them get a little attention this year. And
yeah.
Yes.
You know who to vote for.
Yeah.
New England Give Camps coming up April 4th through 6th that weekend. So if you're a programmer, a designer, like in the area, it's down in it's probably at the Microsoft Center again, down in Cambridge on Memorial Drive.
More camping on the floor.
Yeah, so like you know, it's like you know, kind of like a 36-hour campathon where you're writing code for nonprofits. It's a good way it's great. It's a way you can commit. And donate your expertise to worthy causes that you believe in. So you get a certain kind of socially conscious, giving, competent nerd that there. And there's food, and there's people bring tents, and there's prizes, and it's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, the Veronica Mars movie is coming up too, March 14th.
You just started getting into that show, huh?
Yeah, I'm in season 3.
I've never seen it.
I know everything about it.
Is it good?
It is good.
Does it fill your, like... What's the word I'm looking for? Like the Nancy Drew type?
Yes. Yeah. Sleuthing women. Fast-talking, sleuthing, smart women. It's great. I like it.
Nice.
I guess that's it.
Is that going to do it? That was a fast 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking we should like extend these a bit.
I think
if we have
guests,
that many.
Guests we can extend to maybe 45. But I think 30 is pretty good. We just about touched base on everything.
That's true. If you think of this as a more of a update.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only a couple of things. And we can talk about that next week.
Yeah.
But we need to get some more guests on here, like maybe Kentakoga.
Yeah. He might not appear.
Yeah. Maybe.
We'll try.
We'll have to ask him. All right. Until next week, I am photographer Sid Caesar.
Designer Dave Say.
And we will see you later. Bye. Music provided by Michael Bellar and the Azzes Ensemble. You can visit him at michaelbellar.com. Give him your love.